Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Seattle, Washington, and earned degrees in communication and English from Spring Arbor University and a master's degree in journalism from Michigan State. From 1989 to 92, he was director of Spring Arbor University Radio. And from 92 to 95, he was a news reporter slash anchor for Standard News Radio Network. And since 1996, 26 plus years, he's been the White House correspondent for Salem Radio Network. His name, Greg Cluxton. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Pasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to Greg Cluxton. For the last 26 plus years, he's been the White House correspondent for Salem Radio Network. Greg, welcome. An honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's great to be with you. Thanks for the invitation.
All right. Let's start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please.
Sure. I grew up mostly in Seattle. When I was a young tot, we were in New York State, but moved out to the West Coast, and I did most of my growing up in the Seattle, Washington area. I have a younger brother, 3 years younger, loving family. My mom and dad are still in Seattle, and the rest of us have scattered across the country. But I had a great growing up, just a normal childhood. I had a paper route once I got to about, you know, sixth, seventh grade, and I fell in love with the radio, not by just listening to it, but because of a speech class, a drama class that I was in eighth grade. And it was in that class that we did a one-act play that was based on happenings at a radio station. The interesting thing is the drama teacher had actual working props with a turntable, a microphone, and headphones. And you have to remember, Jack, this was before Walkmans and iPods, and we just didn't have mobile audio equipment necessarily available to a lot of households or a lot of kids in those days. And so this was really the first time I was using this equipment. And even though it was just for a play, I was really intrigued by it. And I went home and I started, you know, fiddling around with my dad's old cassette tape recorder. And I bought some headphones from Radio Shack with some of my paper route money. And I started making radio programs, recording radio shows in my basement bedroom. I would interview my brother. I'd go across the street and interview kids. I would read newspaper stories out of the paper into the cassette recorder. And I was just playing records and experimenting a lot. So that was where my early love of radio began in seventh or eighth grade.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Well, my mom is one of hospitality. She has a gift of hospitality. She's an excellent cook, and she loves to entertain, and she is extremely generous. And that is just the perfect combination of being a hostess and a gracious neighbor and a kind coworker. And she is all of those, and just a fabulous mom, a loving mom. My dad, also a loving dad. Different characteristics, different traits, different strengths. He was involved in higher education during his career, started as a high school English teacher, then went into college administration and consulting, and has been involved in higher education his entire life. And he really showed me the benefit of following through on a job in terms of putting effort into whatever project you're working on, seeing it to completion. And he really instilled in me the importance of doing quality work. And hopefully that's carried over into my own life and my own career.
We're talking to Greg Cluxton. If you want to learn more, www.srnonline.com. Greg, how did you get your first break in broadcasting?
Well, it's interesting because I moved from Seattle to the state of Michigan the summer before my senior year of high school. Not the most opportune time to be moving and changing schools right before your senior year, but it turned out to be a, a great move and opportunity for our family and for me personally as well. I had a great senior year in the tiny town of Spring Arbor, Michigan, a couple of hours west of Detroit. And what was interesting is the small college there in town, Spring Arbor College, now Spring Arbor University, had two radio stations, AM and FM radio station. They had a very strong communications program for their undergraduate students. And I was really drawn to this radio station, and it was a small town, and I was able to even visit the station and go onto campus. And it wasn't just an on-campus station for students to be broadcasting to their buddies in the dormitory. These were legitimate radio stations that had a large listening area around southern Michigan, and they were operated to give training and students the opportunity to learn what was like doing real radio work while they were in college. And so I ended up attending Spring Arbor, and I got my first break the summer before my freshman year. So before the other freshmen even arrived, because I lived in town and the station was short of staff workers that summer, they said, hey, we know you're going to be coming in as a communication major and a radio person of interest, and we'll get you started. And so I started working that summer. That was the summer of 1984. So I was immediately drawn to that opportunity. It turned out to be a wonderful hands-on experience. I worked every imaginable shift over the next 4 years as a college student, and then also branched off into working at some other local radio stations in Jackson and Lansing, Michigan, working at both a country radio station and later a rock and roll oldies station, just getting any chance I could to work overnight shifts, weekend jobs. I just fell in love with radio and knew that's exactly what I wanted to do.
You were the Dick Pertin out there in Jackson, et cetera, okay? Spring Arbor University, small college in the middle of nowhere. What makes it so special?
Well, it is a very special place, and there are a lot of small liberal arts Christian colleges and universities, and other faith-based schools, and even non-faith-based schools that have real opportunities in small towns such as Spring Arbor to make a real impact. And for me, the opportunity to not just have the radio experience, and to have that opportunity for a school of that size, but also just the on-campus environment just is very vibrant. And, you know, the faculty to student ratio is such that you really get to know your professors. They'll invite you to their homes. And there's just a real camaraderie and a real live spirit on campus there. So it was a combination of all of those factors. What happened that was of interest that helped me move to Washington later was my senior year at Spring Arbor, I attended the American Studies program in Washington, D.C. It was the fall semester, and I moved to Washington. I lived on Capitol Hill. I was studying with about 40 other students from other colleges across the country. A lot of them were political science majors, and they were interested in going into politics and into government. A part of this program was not just the classwork, but having an internship. And I interned at a radio news network during that semester, and that laid the groundwork for me returning to Washington several years later.
We're talking to Greg Cluxton. When we come back, we're going to ask him who his role models were as he began his broadcasting career. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Greg Cluxton. Greg, you start your broadcasting career. Who were the role models and why?
When I was a kid, just listening to AM and FM radio for the first time in my early teen years, I was just fascinated by a couple of the local DJs and on-air announcers in Seattle, Washington. My mom often had the radio on, and she was listening to the news station, and I was, of course, a preteen and interested in the music stations, and I would listen to Gary Lockwood and some of the other DJs at that time, and I wasn't necessarily sure I wanted to be going in that direction, but I was just really interested in the production value of how they did their announcing work and how they put together their radio programs. But then later, as I went into college, and then as I was telling you earlier about this internship in Washington, D.C., It was a small radio news network called IMS News, International Media Services News. And it was run by a man by the name of Forrest Boyd. And he was a former White House correspondent for Mutual Broadcasting during the 1960s and 70s. And he traveled the world and covered the White House during the Johnson and Nixon administrations. And he was a humble man, outstanding journalistic credentials, and had reached the top of his field in terms of being, at the time, Mutual Broadcasting Radio. And he went then and started his own radio network in Washington, D.C. And he had an enormous influence on me at that time, Jack, because I was grappling with how best to really pursue my dream of broadcasting at that time. I was nearing the end of my college career. I knew I wanted to be involved in radio. And his professional passion was really of interest to me. He wanted to provide and was providing a network news service, hourly network newscasts, to a Christian radio audience. And the idea was not to report religious news exclusively, but to give religiously oriented stories their proper place along with the major headlines of the day. And he was really the first person to do that at the national level. He was a pioneer in terms of news broadcasting. And so he was somebody that I was very much influenced by in a positive way. And a few years later, after I graduated and was already working in the Midwest, he called me up and invited me to work with him in Washington as he was joining a brand new national radio network at that time in the early 90s. So I moved to D.C. to begin my work as a reporter and an occasional news anchor.
All right. You've been in Washington, D.C. for decades. It's a bubble. Some call it the swamp. What's it like being in that hotbed of politics and news?
Well, it's an interesting place, and I would say that it's not necessarily for everybody. I'm interested in, as I've talked about, the broadcasting aspect of what I do, and then as that turned into being a news job, and then, as you mentioned at the very beginning of the program, I did get a master's in journalism at Michigan State before coming to Washington, so I knew that my merging or the marriage of my interest in broadcasting and journalism would come together in a unique way, and it really has here in Washington. There are a lot of people that come to Washington, Jack, and they're very interested in getting in that swamp and mixing it up and going to the cocktail parties and getting a who's who list of who they get to know. And there are others who I would put myself in this category of, I'm in D.C., I'm doing my job, I go home in the evenings and work with my family and with my hobbies and attend church. And so I live outside of the Beltway bubble in some sense, but certainly working in it, you can't escape it because the politics in this town, that's number one. The football team, even though they haven't been good for a long time, and politics, those are the two big stories here in D.C. year in and year out.
All right, let's go to August 1996. And you're given a temporary assignment for 30 days. Changed your life. Tell us about that assignment.
It did change my life. I had been working in Washington at that point almost 4 years. And as you mentioned, was given a temporary assignment at the White House. I had been previously assigned covering the U.S. Senate. So I was up on Capitol Hill. There was a vacancy at the White House. And they asked me in August of 1996, when Bill Clinton was president and running for re-election, to go over and essentially keep the seat warm in the White House for the radio network. I was only supposed to be there a month or so, keep the seat occupied until they hired a replacement. And I have been there ever since August of 96. So technically, I'm in the 26th year of a 30-day temporary assignment. And it's one of those twists in life that you really can't anticipate. It was an opportunity. I was there and I took it. And this has been an opportunity that has lasted much longer than I had anticipated.
All right. Share with us a typical day. Probably there's never a typical day, but what's it like being a White House correspondent every day?
Well, you know, I get that question a lot, and it's a good question because it's obviously a unique location, the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and it's in a powerful city of politics. And here's the deal. I'm an ordinary guy. I just happen to work in what I think is a pretty fascinating place. And I tell people, first of all, it is not glamorous work. I work in a basement. There are two levels of the press workspace Just off the west wing of the White House. And most of the radio networks are located on the lower level of that press briefing room area. And my radio booth is the size, about two phone booth sizes. If you folks remember what a phone booth is like, they're about two of those put together. That's about the space of my work area. And no natural light into the basement. And we're strictly limited in our movement around the White House complex. And sometimes there's a lot of hurry up and wait on the job. But our daily schedule, Jack, is dictated by the president's schedule. If he has events that day, then we know that we're going to be covering those events either in person or remotely. And we'll be taking notes and, in my case, recording audio for our radio network newscasts later. And so if it's a morning event, if it's an evening event, my schedule follows what the president's schedule is. Now, I don't want to give a negative impression of the workspace there. You can be down in the basement and it can be dark and all the rest, but you have to also understand the workspace is valuable real estate given its proximity to the West Wing and the executive seat of power. You can go upstairs and be in the press secretary's office, and you're just a few steps away down the hallway from the Oval Office. And so when things get busy at the White House and there's major breaking news, it is the epicenter of news activity, and I have found it to be very fun as well as challenging work.
The press room. I've been in it once. It's a tiny room,
yeah.
And you sit in the sixth row, always the same seat.
Always the same seat. Yeah, the seating arrangement gets updated from time to time, but currently I'm in the sixth row, yes.
So, okay, what's the Oval Office like?
The Oval Office is fantastic. It's unlike the basement, it is well lit, and there are glamorous parts and locations within the White House, and certainly in the West Wing and in the residence, executive mansion area. Nice art hanging on the walls, clean tile floors, beautiful carpet usually in the Oval Office, and there are a couple of sofas there, a couple of wingback chairs that sit in front of the fireplace, built-in bookcases along the walls there, and each president gets the opportunity to decorate the Oval Office pretty much how they like. They can pick the color of the rug, they can choose the furniture they want and the furnishings and the art that hangs on the wall. And it's a very special place. It truly is oval. And a lot of the movies and TV shows that have come out in recent years that are based on politics or show a scene of the White House and the Oval Office, they look very close, very similar to what the real Oval Office looks like.
We're talking to Greg Cluxton and a 30-day temporary assignment in 1996, has turned into a 26-plus year career ministry. When we come back, we're going to talk to him about the various presidents he's covered since William Jefferson Clinton. And I'm Jack Rasulo, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasulo. We're with Greg Cluxton. Greg, since 1996, you've covered every president, starting with William Jefferson Clinton. Talk about him.
You know, Clinton had an unbelievable skill, a gift, really, of focusing on you when speaking to him, if you had the opportunity to meet him in person. He would look at you and listen to you intently. He was incredibly warm, and really that personality and manner served him well politically. And in the early 1990s, when he came to power as president, he and the vice president were really seen as new Democrats, and they were moving the Democratic Party a little more to the political center. It had some success doing that strategy, and at other times it wasn't as successful, but he was a two-term president. And a personal and professional highlight for me during the Clinton administration came in January of 1998. I'd been at the White House on that beat for about a year and a half when I was granted a one-on-one interview with the president in the Oval Office. And I have to tell you, I was more nervous about the small talk that I anticipated before the interview actually beginning than the interview itself. I had my questions written out. I was told I had about 12 to 15 minutes. In my first year and a half at the White House, I had been already in the Oval Office on occasion when we were a part of the press pool rotation. So the venue wasn't intimidating, but just the idea of one-on-one with the president, what are we going to talk about? Well, as it turned out, a couple of weeks prior to the interview, My first son, our second child, was born, and the president's staff briefed him ahead of time, letting him know we just had a new baby in our house. So after going into the Oval Office, shaking his hands, saying good morning, the president asked about our brand new baby. And like any proud new dad, I had a couple of pictures in my coat pocket, and so I promptly asked, would you like to see some pictures? And he said, yes. And so I handed them to him. He walks over to the desk. I go over to the chair where I'm to be seated next to him at the desk. And there we are sitting in the Oval Office, Bill Clinton, the president of the United States, holding snapshots of my two-year-old daughter and newborn son. And he's asking about the family, asking normal questions that anybody would. And it was just a very nice personal moment. I have to add, too, that the interview may not have happened if it was scheduled for a later time, because the Monica Lewinsky scandal broke 2 weeks and 2 days after my interview. And the rest of 1998, as you know, was a messy year of politics, and that interview might not have happened.
All right, so your little son carried you for that one. Now let's talk about George W. Bush. And I think your daughter, if you'll tell us, helped carry you through the Bush administration. What was George W. like?
George W., unlike the caricature, I think, that was often portrayed of him being not very smart and not very astute or very inquisitive, certainly he had a different approach to governing and policy and politics than his predecessor, Bill Clinton, did. But I quickly learned early on at a roundtable radio interview with the other radio network reporters that we had at the end of May of 2001. So the president, George W. Bush, had only been in office for 4 months or so, and we had a roundtable interview. He went around the table. We all asked our one question each, and he answered those questions fine. And then he stayed around for about another 35 or 40 minutes, unscheduled time with us off the record. And we stood up and we're milling around the Roosevelt Room there in the West Wing and talking. And he might be talking about other things at first, sports and that kind of thing. But everything, when you're in the room with the president, everything ultimately gets back to politics. And we quickly realized that he was very, very in tune with what was happening politically and much smarter than he often gets credit for. But the personal story that was maybe most interesting during the Bush administration was at a Christmas reception. Most every president will hold receptions during the holidays and will invite various people from across town. So you've got members of Congress who come, White House staff people come, diplomats, and there is an evening set aside for reporters and journalists who cover the White House. And we're allowed to come to a reception and bring one guest. And so for the first few years, I brought my wife to these events. But as my kids started getting a little older, I thought it would be nice if I could take them. And so I took my daughter, Katie, and it turned out, Jack, that on the year that I took her, the White House Christmas reception was on the same day as her 11th birthday. So she already had a special gift in that it was her birthday. She was going to the White House. She was wearing a cast on her arm because she had broken her arm a few weeks earlier. So I said, you know what? Why don't we have a Sharpie pen in your hand? And at the reception, when there's a photo line and you get to greet the president and the first lady, maybe, just maybe, we could get an autograph on your cast from the president. We didn't even have to ask him. We got introduced to the president. We walked right up. He saw her cast. He saw the pen. He grabbed it out of her hand. And we told him it was her birthday. And he wrote right on her cast, "Happy 11th, G.W. Bush." And let me tell you, it was a hit at the reception the rest of the night. And we still have that cast.
All right. President Barack Obama.
Barack Obama, first Black president in U.S. history, and covering his inauguration was something very special. January 20th, 2009. You know, weather is usually very cold, and the hours are long for these inauguration events, but reporting from inaugurations in Washington is really a tremendous honor, and I've had the opportunity to do that since the year 2001. And our radio broadcast position is ideal. It's about 25 or 30 yards from the podium there on the west front of the U.S. Capitol building. And that's true for any of the inaugurations. But that year, 2009, Barack Obama, the volume of people on the National Mall in Washington who had come into D.C. for his inauguration was staggering. It was by far the largest crowd and event I had attended there at outside the Capitol building. And he brought from his campaign this energy into Washington that we hadn't really seen in a long time. And a lot of it had to do with the historic nature of him becoming president of the United States.
A month or two ago, he came back for the first time, I think, in 11 or 12 years, the 12th anniversary of Obamacare. And he was like a rock star in that room. And Kamala was like a teenage girl with the Beatles. And I felt sorry for President Biden. It was like he was a ghost in the room. How do you explain this rock star image of Barack Obama?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. He was back at the White House, and it was his first time back in more than 5 years. And it was obviously a very friendly and loving crowd. People were there for the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. So obviously all supporters there of the president who were invited guests for that event. So it was an extremely warm event for him. But yeah, this, as you say, kind of this rock star status that he has, it really feeds from his administration and from his campaign when he tapped into this idea of hope and changing things. And the fact that he was the first Black president gave a whole new generation of Americans this idea, to steal the name of a great radio program, that anything is possible. He truly demonstrated that in a tangible way. For Black Americans and minorities in this country that nobody in that position had done previously.
We're talking to Greg Cluxton, and when we come back, we're going to now jump to the Trumpsters regime. And I'm Jack Rasulla, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Rasulla, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Rasulla. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to a great person who lives his dream every day, and he goes to the White House every day. Greg Cluxton, White House correspondent for Salem Radio Network. Greg, the Trumpster. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Donald Trump's surprising win in 2016 over Hillary Clinton is one for the history books. In a lot of ways, here we had a non-politician whose plain talking message resonated with enough Americans who were unhappy with Washington politics to really shock the establishment and make a lot of the polls, and make people question a lot of the polls that were leading up to that 2016 race. You know, Trump did not talk like other candidates, and he was confrontational in debates with fellow Republicans and other opponents, including Hillary Clinton. He used social media in a way that we really hadn't seen before at the presidential level. And he also survived scandal that might have undone other candidates. So he had kind of this brash and unique personality. He used not only social media, but his TV name recognition to the fullest extent possible. And then, of course, early in the morning, the day after Election Day in November 2016, when he was announced the winner of the race versus Hillary Clinton, it sent shockwaves really through Washington, and to some extent around the world, because it was unexpected by so many people, not by everybody, but by a large number of people. And then once in office, Trump ran a White House different from most presidents, at least in recent memory in recent years, and at times very chaotic, but always making headlines. And the president really seemed to, Donald Trump really seemed to flourish in a way when he was in the middle of a lot of action and even a lot of chaos. And that's exactly how he ran his presidency.
Talk about his tweets.
His tweets. Some would say very unpresidential, because here he was, the leader of the United States, the chief executive of our country, and he is name-calling and poking fun and at sometimes being irreverent, and also at times making news and even surprising his own administration. There was a time that he announced a new policy involving the Pentagon, and the defense secretary didn't even know that the president was going to tweet that. And so during these Trump years, Jack, if you were a reporter, you were glued to your Twitter feed, to his Twitter feed, simply because that was the main way he communicated. You had to wake up in the morning and see if he had already tweeted something that was sensational by 6, 7 a.m. in the morning. And he would do that all day, and he would do it into the evening. And so it was a much different presidency to cover than the previous presidents that I had the opportunity to cover. And that was the case for everybody in the press corps, for that matter.
All right, a little humor here. It's this current regime, it's deja vu, not all over again, but the opposite. What happens now is the government makes a policy decision and President Biden doesn't know about that policy decision. Okay, talk about Joseph Biden.
Well, you know, as a candidate and as a politician, really, Joe Biden was in so many cases, so many ways, the opposite of Donald Trump. Here you have Biden, a creature of Washington politics, having served 36 years in the Senate and before that, and then two terms as the vice president during the Obama administration. So here he is, someone, a part of the very political Washington scene that Donald Trump was calling the swamp and was upending. And so we have flipped, you know, 180 degrees going from Trump back to Biden, or to Biden, and in some ways getting back to a way of governing that is more common, or what the American public is used to in terms of following the norms of the White House and that sort of thing. So the Trump years, fascinating in a lot of ways, but so different from what other presidents have done. And at least in terms of how you conduct yourself in the office, Joe Biden is a throwback. There's no question. He is certainly a throwback given his decades here in D.C.
Okay, for the last 26 and a half years, you've been around an awful lot of liars, okay? Not all of them are liars, but press secretaries, presidents, senators, congresspeople, they're masters at not answering or not telling the truth. Do you ever get mad at them and want to throw stuff and say, you liar? Well, when they're not telling the truth, what do you do?
Yeah, you're right. There are instances of that happening, and that's probably always going to be the case. And it can be maddening, I admit. It can be maddening at times. One thing that I do tell people about my news coverage is I'm interested in the issues and the topics that I cover, but I have what I say is really, in a way, an emotional detachment from getting revved up about the issues. I certainly have my personal feelings and opinions, but I don't let them dictate how I feel when doing my job. I try to have that sort of emotional detachment. I've likened it in a way to, you know, if a doctor or a nurse is in the emergency room and they're working on somebody who is brought in, and it can be very emotional if someone is in dealing with great trauma, but you have to put aside what you may be feeling at that point and get the job done at the moment. And so there are times when I just simply have to do that. Obviously, we want to provide context as journalists if we think something is not being expressed in a truthful manner. We try to provide context to explain what is happening. But whether it's a press secretary or a politician on the Hill or even a president, there are times when either we're not getting the straight answer or we're not getting the full story.
Okay, you've covered a lot of press secretaries since 1996. who's been the best?
I really enjoyed and appreciated and admired Mike McCurry. He ended up being the first press secretary that I was working with during the Clinton administration. Mike had come over from the State Department, I felt had a real diplomatic approach to the job, but was also very personable. And he was somebody who was very measured, I think, for the most part. And he, I just really appreciated the way he handled his job. I also thought that Dana Perino during the George W. Bush administration was a very effective press secretary, as was Josh Earnest during the Clinton years. I'm sorry, during the Obama years. He was somebody, he would stay until the last question was asked, it seemed. He would stay in much longer than a lot of us in the room thought he needed to, but he wanted to make sure just about every person got their questions answered. And he was so even keel. He just, you could not get him mad, at least not from the podium with the TV cameras and the radio microphones on. He was a real professional.
We have 1 minute left. Jen Psaki is moving over to MSNBC. What advice do you give to the new press secretary, other than calling that guy in the sixth row for the first question every day?
That's right. Yeah. Look at the back of the room in the briefing room. And that's something that every press secretary has to deal with. They deal with the legacy media news organizations and the TV networks in the first couple of three rows. And that's always a challenge for any press secretary of any political party. But for a new incoming press secretary, obviously, we hear about transparency, we hear about truthfulness, and we do want those qualities in a press secretary. And we want the opportunity to work with the White House on logistics so that the entire press corps, whether it's radio or TV, writers, photographers, still photographers, camera people, we all want access so that we can, to the best of our ability as journalists, tell the story of what's happening with the president and their administration so that our listeners and viewers and readers can better understand what's happening at the political level, in politics, at the national level, at the White House.
Maybe the most famous White House correspondent of all time was Helen Thomas. She covered 10 presidents. But a modern-day male version of Helen Thomas is our guest, Greg Clugston. You're a classy professional. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you so much, Jack. It's been my pleasure to be here.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Fasulo. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.